catering, functions, gaming, accommodation and more. Join us for weekly entertainment, Trivia Tuesdays, Major Prize Draws Thursdays, Saturday entertainment, Sunday brunch, and enjoy a beautiful meal at our award-winning restaurant. We look forward to welcoming you and yours for a great time in Raglan at the Harbourview Hotel.
Looking for a conference room for your next get-together? Raglan Holiday Park's Hui Room is a modern facility that caters for up to 35 people. And with large screen, bathroom facilities and a full kitchen, it's perfect for team building, meetings, events and more. The Hui Room is only a few metres from the beach, which is great for extra activities, and accommodation is available for anyone coming from out of town. We do great discounted rates for locals too, so give us a call on 825 8283 today.
Raglan Community Radio supports the Code of Broadcasting Practice for the broadcasts of its radio programs. If you hear something you find offensive or intentionally misleading on our station, you have the right to complain. A formal complaint about a specific program or incident must be made within 20 days of broadcast of that program to Raglan Community Radio, PO Box 126, Raglan.
Kia ora, good evening, Whangaroa and Raglan. Hope you're managing to catch the waves this evening. You're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio. We rang your Whangaroa at 7 minutes past six. So looks like it's going to carry on being a fine evening, not all that cold tonight. And so we're probably going to get some rain coming along on Thursday. Late on Thursday, probably overnight and into beginning of Friday. So it depends which forecast you look at. Some forecasts are saying that there's a rain belt, which is going to come across us on Friday. And some forecasts say it's going just to the south of us. So find out which is the more accurate on Friday, I suppose. The pressure at the moment, reasonably high, 1,025, which then with not having any rain around just at the moment. The temperature slowly dropping down to 18 now, was quite a bit higher before, but not going down all that low tonight. We are going to get a low of 7 degrees in almost a week's time, so that's going to be quite a bit cooler. We're also going to get a high of 22, which is pretty much what it has been today. The next high tide is just after 8 o'clock this evening, 3.1 meter high tide, and so that'll be just as the sun's setting, and the sun sets at 8 o'clock, so a minute earlier. 8 minutes past eight, 7 minutes later, rather. Yes, looking at the wrong figure, looking at what it was last week, which is 8 minutes different from what it is this week. And the morning is 6 minutes different. So 6:01 for a sunrise was last week, 6:07. The next high tide after the one at just gone eight this evening will be just gone 8:30 tomorrow morning, 8:37, 3 meter. High tide, which is fractionally lower high tide than this evening's, gradually moving away from that full moon. The things which are on this week, so as usual, we've got the Harbourview Hotel Trivia Night on starting at 7 this evening. And then, as usual, Raglan Ramblers going rambling tomorrow. Different place each time. For once, it's going to be a local walk tomorrow, probably just the morning walk going round the Kaitaki walkway and the various other walkways around town. And hopefully that high tide at 8:37 will have gone down enough to come back along the beaches to the north and east of the town. So that's Raglan Ramblers starting usual time and place, 9 o'clock from near the Catholic Church, which is on James Street, and lots of people muddle up the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church. The Anglican Church is the one up at the roundabout. The Catholic Church is the one further down the road near Wallace Street. I haven't got anything else down for tomorrow. There's all the usual events happening, of course. If you want to have a look at those, have a look at our raglanradio.com page on the internet, and look for the what's on list of things, and it gives you a week at a time as to what's on, and you can click on the detail of them and find out more about each of the events. But anyway, moving on to Thursday. It's the second Thursday of the month, so it's Friends of Wainui, Bush Park, work morning, starting 9 o'clock on Thursday. Quite a lot of us are going off on Thursday morning to the Hikoi in Kirikiriro, Hamilton, which, as you might have heard on the news, started off this morning from Cape Ranga and is heading its way down here. Day four, it's going to get to Hamilton and is starting off. Not quite worked out whether it's 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock from the rugby stadium or near the rugby stadium, and heading to not very far away at Garden Place. It was originally going to be starting over in Hamilton East, but maybe they've decided it's rather easier not to have to cross the bridges. Because the bridges are not all that plentiful in the centre of Hamilton. They've just opened a new one down for the Peacock development, but in the centre of Hamilton, there's still not that much in the way of bridges available. So my guess is that they decided on the rugby stadium as a preferential place to walk from. You don't need to cross a bridge. So as I say, that's starting, not quite sure when, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. Some of us are catching the bus out there, the 6:50 bus, I think it is. 6:50 from Raglan West. Probably more like 7:05 by the time it gets to the other side of Raglan. And heading into town on the double decker. It's always good on a fine day, which hopefully it still will be in the morning. That rain's coming later on. Other things which are happening on Thursday, apart from the Hikoi in town and the Friends of Wainui work morning, I should mention where the work morning is, I suppose, which is 3.5 kilometres out of town on the right-hand side as you head towards the beaches along Wainui Road. Other things happening on Thursday are that there's a beginning of an exhibition at the old school called Long Live Cowgirls Exhibition, and the opening of that 6 o'clock on Thursday, and then it's going to be open daily 10 till 2 until the 22nd of November. And the junior football have also got their AGM on Thursday over at the campground, 6:30. Moving on to Saturday, the Time Bank's got a market called the Taste of Time Bank, and it's happening at the hall on Stuart Street, the church hall on Stuart Street, from 2 till 4 on Saturday afternoon. And then in the evening, there's the film which the old school shown a couple of weeks ago, Kawhawhai Tonu, which is a story about the 1860s. It's a story in Te Reo Māori, but has got English subtitles, so a good way of brushing up on your Te Reo, even starting to learn it, which I think is more my level of Te Reo. So that's on again. And they've also got It Ends With Us, starting at 7:30, which they're going to repeat again in a couple of weeks' time. And then on Sunday, Soulscape's got what they're calling a morning ecstatic dance with meditation and DJ Herman Saltz and things like that. So that's happening from 10:30 at Soulscape out along Winery Road on Sunday morning, and costs $20. And in the evening, the old school is again showing Thelma, which is a film they've shown quite a bit. Well, say evening, 4:30 on Sunday for Thelma. And the only other thing I've got written down for this week is the Horticultural Society. It's their monthly meeting, 1 o'clock in that church hall on Stuart Street. Talking about indoor plants this time and how to look after them. So that's the week as I've spotted it. Things which have been in the news this week. The Infrastructure Committee has met this morning. The District Council's Infrastructure Committee. The only thing of interest that I noticed on there was that there was mention of sorting out a slip at the Extreme Zero Waste site, the dump, and saying that that's been completed. The news from Regional Council is that the bike rack use has been withdrawn on, well, it's not just on the Raglan bus, it's on buses throughout the country. Because about 16 years after they introduced them, Waka Kotahi seems to have realised that bikes get in the way of headlights when they're in racks on the front of buses. And so they put out a note saying it's not a good idea to carry bikes at night time unless you've checked whether your particular bus has its lights obscured by carrying a bike at night time. But for reasons that I've not totally understood, and which the Regional Council explained as due to the tunnels we've got and due to the fog we've got, I'm not aware that there are any tunnels in Waikato on any bus routes, but nobody's corrected me on that one anyway. There are obviously tunnels elsewhere, but not in Waikato as far as I know. So that doesn't seem much of an excuse for not running buses during the day with bikes on them. And the other excuse of fog, well, we do occasionally get fog, but really the headlights on buses are sufficient, even with a bike on the front, to spot a big bus coming if you're in the fog. So again, that doesn't seem a great excuse, but anyway, that's the one they're sticking with. So they're not allowing bikes on buses until future notice, and they say that they're working proactively with operators to resolve this matter as soon as possible, whenever that might be. Waka Kotahi suggests tests that they need to do, and it's not at all obvious that they're actually going ahead and doing the tests, because they say that you can fit different types of headlamps and different bulbs and things like that, and that sorts out the problem. But it's not at all obvious that that's being done by Regional Council. Certainly they've not responded to questions about that. So no bikes on buses for the time being. And Waka Kotahi happily admit that the main road from here into Hamilton is not suited to cycling. So that means that anyone who wants to bring a bike here has problems. You do quite often see bikes on the bus, and you do occasionally see people, well, fairly often see people cycling down the main road. So one way or another, look out for bikes probably, as there's maybe going to be more of them around, given that you can't take a bike on the bus at the moment. Talking about fog, there's a heading on Raglan 23 that says Raglan whiteout, but they're talking about the water tower and saying it's been painted white, and after the blessing of the old mural on the 7th of November, so that's 5 days ago, by Komatua Sean Ellison, the old mural was painted all over white in preparation for a brand new one by local mural artist Pio Araj. And it says the new mural was needed as multiple graffiti tags had spoilt the old one. And that the design was chosen from amongst 17 artists and the selection panel decided on this one, which so far I've not seen what it's going to look like, which seems rather odd. They're obviously going to show it to us and then wait for people to object, which would be a bit too late. Though they do say feedback from a community survey was used in the selection of the artist and the design. I don't recall seeing that either, but maybe I've not been looking carefully enough. All the elements identified as important to the community, which are water, ocean, nature and people, have been incorporated into the new mural, which is expected to be complete before Christmas. Funding for it from the Well Energy Trust, the Progressive Property and District Council, and Raglan Naturally using funding from the Department of Internal Affairs. And also another project that's trying to raise money is Raglan Refill. That's the proposal to put a bulk bin store outside Raglan Club, one of the new shops that they've built there. Of course, we did have a bulk bin shop until a year or so ago, but then that moved off to Hamilton East, where it seems to be doing very well, on Grey Street. And there's now a proposal to replace it with something called Raglan Refill. And they've got a give a little page. If you're interested in encouraging them to open up, they've got an aim of raising $10,000 on that give a little page. And so far, they're a bit over a quarter of the way to doing that, which is 30 people giving slightly under $100 each, by my reckoning. And they've had that give a little page going 17 days. So hopefully more people will spot it and more people will decide it's worth having a refill shop, bulk bin shop in the main street. As I understand it, the give a little is more of a loan than a donation, because they're saying that you'll get credits for anything you buy at the shop according to how much you've given them. I'm not sure how that's going to work out, because it seems to me that if people come in and they take things away for nothing, then they end up with no stock. But maybe I've not understood that. Maybe it depends how much people have given and how long it takes for them to reach their credit limit, so to speak, on the things they're buying from the shop. There's also notice of in a week's time, at exactly the time that talking to Raglan begins next week, a presentation from the District Council and Watercare in the Raglan Club on the sewage proposals. So the media release put out by the council says a presentation on the 19th of November at 6 p.m. in the Raglan Club will update the community on the council's proposal for wastewater. How and where wastewater is discharged from a wet treatment plant has been discussed for some time with Mana Whenua and community concerned about treated wastewater in the harbour. The plant is being upgraded to a membrane bioreactor. Wastewater will be highly filtered, which means more options for what can be done with it. We've been having ongoing discussions with groups and Mana Whenua, supported by a lot of research, said Waters manager Keith Martin. This has helped reach a recommendation that is more cost-effective and we hope will be acceptable to the community. Reviewing three options, community groups have favoured a land-based discharge into a gully at Wainui Reserve, with further technical assessments progressing for that option. So to do those technical assessments, they're putting devices for groundwater monitoring into that bit of Wainui Reserve around the 11th of November, so it should have been around yesterday, for 3 months. And staff will also hold pop-up sessions later in the summer, presumably to tell us the outcome of those three-month experiments with groundwater Wainui Reserve. quite sure whether it's a good idea to do the groundwater monitoring when we get into the drier period, because already quite a lot of the water and mud and everything has dried up. And I would have thought if you wanted to know whether that gully was going to work, it needs to work in the middle of winter when everything's absolutely soaking and occasionally when we've had very heavy rain, the beach below that gully has washed out, or at least had a big channel running through it. So if that happens when we just have heavy rain at the moment and we're not continually pouring water into it, albeit treated water, then just wondering how effective that's going to be. But maybe that's a question for next week. Not quite sure what I'm going to do with Raglan, talking to Raglan next week, whether I'm going to broadcast that live as a meeting over the radio, or whether I'm going to carry on as if it wasn't happening. See nearer the date how that's going. So hopefully in one form or another there'll be Raglan talking to Raglan next week, but not sure quite how that's going to work. And that media release was also picked up by the Waikato Herald, the New Zealand Herald Waikato correspondent, and also by the Waikato Times. So they've got variations on that story. I normally mention the COVID figures, but the COVID figures don't seem to be available this week for reasons that I've not understood. So skip that one. We are just coming up to the bottom of the hour though, so let's have the bottom of the hour items, and then we'll listen to an interview that Aaron did on Friday with our councillor, Lisa Thompson.
Hey, you got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio, and in the studio I've got a councillor, Lisa Thompson. Morning, Lisa.
Morning. What a beautiful morning it is.
I pressed the wrong button, so that's coming up.
Tune in for the best of homegrown music, old and new. New Zealand Music Show, every Tuesday from 11:30 until 1:30.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends.
Raglan Community Radio is celebrating 30 years on air. 2013 to 2017. 2013.
Can't be a real radio station without bumper stickers. So we get a shiny new logo, a smooth website, and some classy new stickers are printed. So fancy!
2014.
Raglan Community Radio celebrates its 20th year on air, and we discover that we're the longest running independently funded community station in the country.
2015.
After quite a few years of struggle, the DJs are coming back. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's also our first year of podcasting after we discover a way of doing it for free.
2016.
New t-shirts were the only news in a steady, non-controversial year. It's nice to have an easy year once in a while.
2017.
We say goodbye to DJ Alan Dando, who passed on while still an active DJ. We also spend some big bucks on a fancy new mixing desk in the studio, which makes the music sound even better.
2017. And so you're listening to Raglan Talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio here in Rangel Whangaroa, just coming up to 6:30. And let's see if we can start that interview with Lisa at the beginning instead of press the right button this time. Sorry about that.
Hey, you got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio, and in the studio I've got a councillor, Lisa Thompson. Morning, Lisa.
Morning. What a beautiful morning it is in paradise.
Let's talk about civil defence, because there's some action, a group forming, which I seem to be part of.
That's exactly right, because you are the comms coordinator and the bringer of the 101 of the Centre of Truth. So it's great to see. And as we were saying earlier, you know, Bob McLeod would be so proud and so enthusiastic that finally we've got a revised civil defence community response plan, and that we are forming a group of people who are really keen to activate a welfare centre should that be required, if something, when in when something does happen in our community.
Yeah, yeah, and we've been getting instructions from Scott, the council. So, what's his title? It's not civil defence manager. It's resilience, something or other, probably.
Community response and resilience manager. That's actually not his title, but I can't think of it.
You fooled us with a title like that. But I've got to say, like, my hat's off to him because I've seen several people come and go in that role at the council and nothing seemed to happen. He's actually made stuff happen. So he's a good one, I think.
And he actually
I hope the council looks after him and keeps him and he doesn't feel the need to leave.
Oh, and we definitely try and do that. But, you know, he comes from an extensive background of, you know, for the fire and emergency services where he was working as a firey, but also in that civil defence space. So he comes with a lot of experience and he's very passionate about that. So he comes with a lot of skills and knowledge in that area, which is really beneficial to us at council and to our communities. And he did mention how many communities want community plans, and I think it was something like 40 plus.
Yeah, I couldn't work out where they all were. I checked that they were all in our district, and he said they were.
They are all in our district.
Must be some quite small communities, small little places.
Yeah, that really want to build their resilience in the face of any civil emergency event. And, you know, we've just had one recently, and it wasn't actually civil defence. We were, as in council, we were supporters in the background for the Te Kauwhata Whangamareno fire.
Oh, the wetland fire. Yeah.
Place. And, you know, and that was a really good example of, because my fellow councillor, Councillor Raimati, Marlene Raimati, who is the councillor for the Whitikahu Wairanga ward, which includes Te Kauwhata and that area where the wetland fire was happening. And she's also a volunteer fire brigade person. She's in the operational support. But, you know, she identified, you know, with the volunteer fire brigade, you know, the civil defence or the community response team could step into providing, you know, food, providing support in that capacity for the volunteer fire brigade. So that was really good to see and to hear of how we could support the emergency services as a community in that space. Because, you know, the purpose of a community response is really around the welfare to the community, and civil defence is activated when there is a danger to life and or buildings. So that is when civil defence is often activated, and then the community comes in support. But we do have the opportunity as a community response group to set up a welfare operation should we feel that is needed. We don't have to have civil defence as an agency to do that on our behalf.
Right, we don't wait for them to tell us. Yeah. We decide.
We can assess and
and we tell them, hey, we're doing this, and they'll just keep an eye out.
And they'll keep an eye out and provide us with support. So there's a top-down process, and there's then a flax roots process from the community.
Well, we might get told.
Yeah, it depends. So there's a, you know, it's an up and down sort of structure. So that's really exciting that we've got that. I saw you pointing at your monitor.
Can you read those words?
No, because I haven't got my glasses on.
Can you read them now? John Lawson found that in some agenda aerodrome workshop. Closure of airfield to be in the long-term plan.
Oh, yes, we've had that. That was our workshop looking at closing the airfield and the options of doing that. So taking, returning that back to the Department of Conservation, changing the designation from an airfield. Looking at all of those options.
But that's happening alongside the return of the land to Mana Whenua as well, is
to
it?
To the original landowners. And so, you know, that is also a process. So how can we do that as the body that currently has the designation to run that area. So looking at all of the options of what, how would that be best returned? Are we better suited to taking the designation of an airfield off there and returning it back to the Crown? And then the Crown makes that decision and works with Mana Whenua. And my understanding is that Tama Pōtaka has met with the whānau and the hapū representatives in October. So those discussions are ongoing.
Who is Tama?
Tama Pōtaka, the MP for Treaty Settlements for National.
Ah, okay, right. It's kind of like a car crash where you don't want to look, and I feel like that about the government. So I don't know who all their people are at the moment. Yeah, it's a bit embarrassing.
As council, we need to work with the right groups and the right agencies in the Crown. In this instance, I mean, we're the face of the Crown, I suppose, for want of a better descriptor in this, because we are the local government and we're the face of it. And currently we own the land, so to speak, in want of a better description. And so we want to ensure that the handover to the rightful owners is done properly.
Mm, okay, all right, so that's...
That's been and gone.
That workshop,
in October.
But that's, I mean, does that mean it's just going to happen now? That it's going to cease to be an airfield in 2025?
Yes, there's that, not sure if in 2025, but that process is underway.
So
we have to engage with the community as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, that it's part of that process that we've been undertaking for a number of years.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yep. All right.
And so it's exciting. So it's a long-awaited that return to the rightful owners, and when that does happen, it would be a cause of celebration.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Next on the list, wastewater discharge info evening, Tuesday, 19th of November.
Yes. So that's. This is another opportunity to celebrate in a way, you know, because this has been a long journey, even longer for hapū, who have been in opposition to...
Multi-decade, isn't it?
Yeah, multi-decade since the first, when the resource consent for the discharge and the outfall out at Wainamu Beach took place. It has been contentious for hapū and for our community with the wastewater treatment discharge into the Moana. So, you know, it's been a multi-pronged approach since 2019. So it certainly hasn't been a quick road to get us to this point. But from my perspective, being involved in it, it has been very thorough in terms of investigating options, looking at a whole suite of things from, I think it was a long list of options.
Yeah, there were possibilities and options.
Now the most, you know, we've got the $26 million upgrade of the wastewater treatment plant. That's well underway.
But is this evening to talk about land-based treatment?
It's to give a context of what has taken place, what we are doing, sharing with the community the work that's been undertaken at the wastewater treatment plant, and also the preferred option of the land-based discharge to Wainui Reserve.
Okay.
So it's exciting. So I really encourage the community to come along to that, and that's happening on the 19th of November. Also what's happening as well, which will be starting hopefully next week, will be drilling work on Wainui Reserve in the gully where the proposed land-based discharge will be taking place.
So that's
it's exploratory.
Engineering investigation.
Yep, and it's exploratory. That's looking at that area, at that particular gully. And so if you see drilling there, it's not for iron sand or anything
or oil.
Like that. Or oil. It's actually undertaking the necessary investigative work in that area so we can have all of that information with the design, which will influence the design of that land-based treatment.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting. But obviously that won't happen really – it won't happen overnight. So we've had it staggered with the wastewater treatment plant upgrade is happening. That will be completed – in June 2025, and it's well on schedule for that to meet that. And then the land-based discharge won't be for another 3 years or so after that. So it's a long process, but it's happening, folks. And whilst we're looking at the land base, the wastewater, the treated wastewater coming out of the upgraded and the new, I should actually say new because it's a completely new.
Yeah, I've seen it. I saw them when they were like they were working on the footings when I was there. So you know it's new. It's brand new.
It's brand new, and it's actually a whole really state of the art technology that's taking, you know, that's being put in place there. So the wastewater treatment actually really, once that's in, is one step away from another treatment to be potable water. So that's
it does raise the question. I know the question's now in the air, if it's putting out water that is, because the engineer said all you would need to do is chlorinate it and then it would be officially classified as potable water.
That's right.
Do we need to do land-based treatment for water that is that clean?
But the thing is,
or land-based disposal, I should say.
Yeah, land-based disposal. I mean, that's something for the community to decide. I can't speak to that, but it is sometime in the future, given what we see in terms of climate, how can we utilise that water if it's one step away from being potable?
It's definitely usable for irrigation, isn't
for
it?
For irrigation, yeah. For other opportunities. You know, so that's a conversation that we need to have. But again, for people in our community, I encourage you to come to the Raglan Club on the evening of the 19th of November at 6 p.m. to join us to listen to where we've been and where we're going in terms of our wastewater treatment plant and then the discharge of the treated wastewater to land.
And that's a Tuesday night, folks.
That's a Tuesday night. So please come along to that. There will also be other opportunities to have a tour and the opportunity to drop into Wainui Reserve, where that option for the land-based treatment, so people can see where that is, and also opportunities to visit our wastewater treatment plant as well. And just saying that we received a national award on our wastewater treatment plant at Te Kauwhata because it's the first in New Zealand, and ours here in Whangaroa will be of a similar build to that treatment plant as well.
So we want to, well, these other councils are going to be lucky to work with us for the Three Waters plans for the future.
One would think so because we have had that. But, you know, we've had the expertise of water care and we've got them until 2028, which is great.
Are there any updates? I know that all the options are on the table at the moment. That's what the Mayor said. That's what you've said. Everyone said that. Is there any progress, or are we saying
in the background
discussions are ongoing?
The discussions are ongoing in the background, and of course we have updates, and I'd have to look at my diary when our next update is on the Three Waters, but you know that's a work in progress, and we've been lucky that we, and I've said this many times on the show, Aaron, we've been lucky because we've been in the space for a while now with water care. So we understand that the advantages of having a specific entity that provides our Three Waters services as opposed to being in-house to council.
Yeah, all right. So that's that story. Now, during the community board meeting the other week, sort of 2 weeks ago, you probably didn't see me. My eyes were like wide open because a council staff member was there to talk about some kind of plan for our community, like a strategic plan or a structure plan or a town plan or some kind of plan. Anyway, no promises were made about exactly what form it would be, but I watched him sit there taking notes as the whole community board was offering him suggestions about issues that needed to be addressed
and,
through
and
a plan.
And issues through the plan, yeah, because it's the update of Waikato 2070.
The district plan.
And
No, it's not that. Sorry,
no,
2070 is not the district plan. That's just a plan.
No. But
it's a long-term plan.
It's the 50-year plan, and I think we did that 3 years ago, or maybe even more.
Doesn't seem that long ago. I think it was 2020, though, because I remember, I think it was 2020.
Gosh, that goes quickly, doesn't it? So, you know, 4 years ago, or whenever it was that that first came out.
You don't believe me, do you?
Oh, I do believe you. Look, sometimes, yeah, time is going faster and faster as we get older, Aaron. Mm. And to the rest of the community, I'm sure others have noted that as well. But with the 2070 plan, that is the council's, I guess, almost in a way, a crystal ball of how our communities, where the growth is going to be. And the community board at that time when we first went out fed into that. And so the feedback that the community board were giving to James Fuller, who attended our community board meeting, was around looking at where we can open up more commercial space in the town area to allow more to happen. And the suggestions were, would it be between along the corridor of Wallace Street, given that we've already got the wharf, and we've got where the other galleries down there, and then we've got town, and then we've, you know, on Wallace Street we have the lights of the herbal dispensary, so we've already got commercial activity. So would that be a sensible place for it to be? So the community board were very much in alignment with pushing for that, and also opening up more industrial space for opportunities, not just at Nomai, but where could that be? So that was a lot of the focus of the corridor that was happening.
Mm. And I wasn't allowed to, but I wanted to say, and affordable housing needs to be, it's an issue the community's facing.
It's an issue for all communities, isn't it? And I think, I mentioned to you earlier, I had a discussion with Axel Beck, who was the one of my colleagues previously on council, and he also was with the Waikato Regional Housing Initiative as well as the CE for that for a period of time. So he's very passionate about housing, and as you're aware, Aaron, we adopted our housing strategy at council earlier this year. So I spoke to him earlier this week about, he asked me how we're going with our strategy, and so I need to get an update. So the housing strategy, the district plan, and Waikato 2070 all feed into that wider picture of what affordability looks like in our communities. And I mean, if we had the golden panacea for that, we would have housing that people could afford to buy.
Well, it's an economic issue that's at the government level to solve. That's my opinion, but I'll argue with anyone about that.
Yeah. Won't have any arguments or opposition from me.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But at a local level, there are things that can be done, and small section sizes are one option. Apartments, allowing for apartments, or multi-story.
Yeah.
Which people will be throwing things at. Actually, there was a lady sitting behind me, and I think you were talking. The discussion was about pushing shops over into James Street or something, and this lady behind me was going, no.
I think she lives in John Street.
Yeah, she lives over that way. But that's going to be, that you're going to get that reaction. I know people out there will be listening to me blithely saying all these ideas, and they'll be thinking no.
But they are discussions we need to have. We're a growing community.
That's why I'm talking about it.
And we have, spaces in the CBD that have been priced out of people's range to actually have retail spaces. So, you know, we do have to have these conversations because our community is growing. And we can turn a blind eye to that and not look at it and look at it in a forward time where we are no longer here, but it will be our children and our grandchildren that hopefully will be living in this community. So we have to be visionary enough to see a place where they belong, and that's with affordable housing. That's with opportunity to have flourishing businesses, all of that sort of stuff. So we have to put aside, we are only here for a brief point in time, and you know, for me, it's incumbent upon us to do planning that sees a future for them, not just for, well, Raglan has always been this way and it should remain this way. Well, we know it won't. So we either be part of the decision making, or we allow it to happen without us inputting into it.
That's why I keep asking about a structure plan or a town plan for the community.
Yeah. And we heard that, and you know, both Alison and James heard that loud and clear from the community board.
So there's a staff council managers you're talking about.
Yeah. And you know how they can do it. And it was interesting because Alison said, "Well, this is interesting because I've never heard this before." That you want, you know, the community board saying they want more commercial area, they want more industrial area.
Can we talk about Kerry's situation? Because that was said in public. So
and it was said in public, and she said that her where she was working, because Kitty Binnersley is an osteo
chiropractor.
Oh, chiropractor. Sorry, Kitty.
She can't hear us because she's in Australia.
Yeah, but she may read or listen to the podcast later on. And so she said that her rent went up, was it 47%? And it made it that she just couldn't have a business here in Raglan. So they've got a mortgage, her and her partner, they're young. And so she's working in Australia. And she commutes backwards and forwards when she can.
So it sounds like she's gone there to make a bit more money that she can then settle back here.
And so
as a community board member, she was on Zoom.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's the harsh reality of her circumstances, you know.
Yeah, and that's a microcosm of issues faced. And there's always a little bit of commercial space comes up every now and again. But there's a supply and demand issue. There's an undersupply at the moment in the town, is the way I would describe it.
And it's charged as the same as it would be if it was in Hamilton, in a CBD area, in other cities as well. So it's a problem.
Yeah,
it's a challenge. And so looking at other areas for commercial spaces. Is a discussion that we really need to have. And one of the community board members said, oh, well, you know, it's a supply and demand and it will always be the cost of what it will always be. But will it? Depends on who the people are and what their motivators are and I guess what, if they own it outright or not, all of those sorts of factors. So, yeah, Whangaroa, we need to have these discussions. You know?
It's a long time since we had an oversupply. I want to say that was Satnam who said that. He didn't seem to like a discussion about finding a way to increase supply and bring prices down. That's my observation of what Satnam was saying. I want to be clear about that. But the rest of the board was look, we need to find a way to do something.
Yeah, and to enable our businesses to thrive. And so we have the diversity and we have that vibrancy that people come to our community for. And we saw that with the Arts Weekend, it was awesome. I mean, it was crazy, but it was awesome. And personally, what I loved is that I saw so many locals, yourself and Jordan as well.
Yeah.
When Lara and I were walking, were we walking there or were we walking back?
We were walking to Rivet and you were leaving,
We were leaving, that's right.
Yeah.
And just...
Because we had to park a long way away.
Well, so did we and we walked. And so going down to see Hayley Hamilton's work and the other young guy who was down there.
Shorty Dubs.
And that was neat, meeting him and seeing Hayley.
And several other artists.
And several other artists.
I haven't been in there for a while, so it was a revelation for me.
Rivet also had artists in there, and it was just fantastic. And just seeing all the locals as well as visitors, and Sarah Bing, and having a good kōrero or a brief kōrero with people, then going down to the wharf, which was manic. And there are things that dressing there.
I didn't try that.
But just seeing, Alan Nicholson from Kafia Oysters there, you know, he's a
Because they had that on the wharf as well.
The Oyster Festival, but also seeing lots of locals just sitting out there getting their fish and chips and things like that.
You know,
it wasn't just visitors. It was a whole variety of people. And it was lovely seeing whānau and being able to catch up with, our whānau down there. It was neat to see, actually. And then going up to Elsa Lai's whare just up the road here and meeting locals who were coming up. It was so awesome. Then going out to the Waikere Sculpture Park.
I did, that was awesome, and that's still going, folks. Too, if you didn't get to see it on the weekends, it's about 500 meters past Soulscape.
They've got
a little sculpture trail there, and it's spectacular. There's about ten different artists on it, which I didn't know it was going to be, even though I interviewed them.
Yeah, but I just thought it was going to be Ty and Lucretia. So they did a fantastic job, and it was lovely to sit there with Ty and have a corridor and with the others and meet the other artists. So
I did want to bring this up because I felt like I know that the various members of the board have different opinions about this, but I didn't feel like the board was terribly supportive of the Raglan Arts Weekend at the community board meeting. And I know that's not directed at you personally because you were, but yeah.
We are a diverse group, but I think I hope that the board, but we, you know, that the board saw the amazing benefits that the Arts Weekend brings, and you know, certainly with the coordinator when she came in.
Nikki. Yep.
When she was able to speak to her application for funding, because I was sceptical at first because the arts we regularly funded them. And when she spoke to it, it was fantastic. And, you know, going and participating on the weekend, it brings so much to the wider community in terms of the town was buzzing. We were celebrating the diversity of artists in our community, and they weren't just in Raglan based. You know, there were ones out at Te Mata, and as you rightly pointed out, the sculpture park at Waikiri at Manu Bay. She was
on top of that, and she was like, she's doing a really good job. And I know that,
and she's got a vision of how to extend that and to, you know, bring in not only more people but to lessen the load on one weekend as well for that.
Yeah, so yeah, they've got a good vision for that. But what I wanted to say was, like, she'll be on a community wage like I am, so I know that she's not earning much. I'm sure she's doing lots of hours for
you
free.
You can't do an event like that, and I've seen similar with Jacqueline Anderson, who's our manager for the Destination Management Organisation, how much work people like her and Nikki put into ensuring that we have events or activities that are happening in our community is phenomenal, actually.
Yeah, and I want to shout out to the sponsors. Sponsors and advertisers often get a negative kind of, there's a negative vibe around that, but they're so important to this. And I actually think the whole, not just the community board, but the whole community needs to support Raglan Arts Weekend, certainly the business community. I would like to see them offer more support, not just a few isolated businesses, because
that's right,
because the benefit they bring is huge. They're bringing quite well off people to the town who've got money to spend.
But they're not only bringing visitors, they're bringing locals back into town. People are buying food.
And the vibe is great.
Yeah, people are doing so many things. People are shopping. They are, you know, they're engaging. They're creating an atmosphere in our town.
That's the thing. It's not just commercial. It's an inspiring vibe, the Arts Weekend, when you go and look at the art. So
it was awesome. And I know, and the artists themselves, you know, that's a massive undertaking for them before, during, and after. So
yeah,
I'm sure that they will all be elated but exhausted as well as Nikki. So well done to the artists, to the organisers, and a big mihi to the sponsors. You're absolutely right. And in a way, you know, businesses in the CBD, you know, through the Arts Weekend or through actually events that happen in our community, organised behind the scenes by whomever, brings that income back into the community, whether it's through retail, whether it's going to our cafes or to the galleries, and through just by the virtue of being on the main street or a business, you're flourishing because of it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we had that discussion in the middle of the one about planning for Raglan, or about housing, and the other thing I wanted to bring up about housing is this is a district-wide thing. In fact, it doesn't really affect Raglan, but what is it called? Variation 3 is a district plan. The words Variation 3 will mean nothing to anyone, but what it looks like to me was the old plan that National and Labor a few years ago had come together and said, okay, we're going to allow three-story houses with three different units on your average residential section, And I, because National pulled out of that before the election, I thought that had died. But it looks like our council has continued with. Is it that plan?
Variation three. Well, it was actually.
I mean, it's three stories and three units on a section.
And Labour. So we have adopted that for specific communities. So it's Ngarua Waihia, Huntly, Tuakau, Pōkeno, and Horatiu. So that's enabling. So variation three is enabling housing supply, and so in the proposed district plan. And so you're right. It's a 3x3, so three stories effectively, yeah. And smaller, and utilising sections of land. So you can have more housing on there. And my fellow councillors from Marlene Raimati and David White were really concerned about, because David is the Huntly ward councillor, and Marlene, I mentioned before, so her community includes Te Kaiwhata, not that that is in her community, but she's seen development at Lakeside, at Te Kaiwhata, with really small housing that's really boxed together, and they raise concerns about, and we've put this variation three in places that there is high poverty. So with the smaller houses, people crammed in, no green spaces particularly, and you mentioned where Jordan is at university, the 3x3s that are in there, they're really close together.
Yeah, folks, go for a drive around.
They're not dynamic places, and so there are concerns from fellow councillors. I can see the benefit of it as well, if they're built in such a way that they are like, have terraces, they've got balconies.
Well, if you go for a drive around the university, that's not what you see. Yeah. You see these funny things banged in together. And
they're cheap.
From my daughter's lounge, you could look across the window into the neighbour's lounge, which is about 3 metres away. And you just couldn't sit there all looking at each other. There's a real purpose behind this.
There is a real purpose
to facilitate houses.
But the responsibility is then on whoever's going to do that, to do it in such a way that it's conducive to healthy living. And healthy living
is cheap. This is a cheap construction.
Yeah, healthy living is where you've got some green space, where you have a balcony, where you're not looking into your neighbour's lounge, all of those sorts of things. So if it's done well, I think it will be good, because it does allow that mechanism to have, I guess, more city type of dwelling in these communities, but it has to be done well.
Yeah, and it's
and it
what
has
I'm
to be
is,
at the centre. It has to be the purpose around people and providing those opportunities to live well.
Yeah, it's what I'm seeing is it amounts to poor urban design. There's like. These buildings with three houses in them still have the 1.5 metre gap to the fence, and on the other side there's another 1.5 metre gap, and we're at the point when if we're doing this three story buildings that we should be doing terrace housing. So you use up that 3 metres and you focus on pull that piece of land around to where it can actually be useful. So, and I don't see, certainly in Hamilton, there's not a lot of requirement clearly to think about those issues. It's just like, now you can put this on and it can be this big, so you fill up the building envelope and you make some money out of it and you build it cheap. And her flat was cheap. It's only a few years old and there were already problems I could see developing. I mean, I used to have a background in building, so I do kind of know what I'm talking about with that. I was unimpressed with the quality of the building.
Yeah, and so I'm looking at the Huntly fact sheet. So with that, offering, you know, that diverse range of housing options, so up to three homes, each up to three stories tall, can be built on suitable land. So, you know, the resource consent and all of those things that you have to meet. And also for Huntly, there'll be a new commercial area being planned that will allow buildings of up to six stories with proper approvals. So the focus for Waikato District Council is on responsible development that meets community needs while respecting, you know, the context of the local heritage and the community itself.
So is there a this draft section of the plan, this section of the plan hasn't been drafted yet?
Well, the
background. This is just the background, like the ideas, the principles at,
well,
at this stage?
This is it. No, this is it because it's been adopted. So this is it. It's not.
Oh, okay.
It's not.
I didn't see that. I didn't know that was happening somehow.
Yeah, so this is. We have adopted the variation 3, and then the district council is moving forward with the variation 3 in the proposed Waikato district plan, and the change includes new rules for building homes that follow the medium density residential standards, helping Waikato District Council meet requirements set by the Resource Management Act and align with national urban development policy. So there's in October, we accepted the bulk of the recommendations because there was an independent hearing panel that heard the submissions about Variation 3. So there are two specific zoning areas for properties that are still in train, I guess, and they're in Ngārua Wahia. So that, you know, so...
Just to say for listeners, this does not affect us here in Raglan.
Yeah, it doesn't affect us, but as I said, it's for Huntly, Ngārua Wahia, Pōkeno, and the communities that I mentioned before. So it's...
But we do need to think about how we're going to supply affordable housing in our community in smaller section sizes, or terrace housing, or going up, you know, like these are
things.
And
people have been opposed to that in the past, but it depends on where that is. You know, do you do it where you're not in the areas where people are blocked by?
Yeah, you put it out of sight.
So is it the corridor coming into town, you know, the main road? I don't know.
John Lawson for years has been suggesting that tall buildings can go in round by the wharf because they would not be visible to the rest of the community from there. That's an idea. Yeah.
And
he's fairly strict about wanting nice urban space. So I think if John's come up with that idea, it's a suggestion
that should be looked at. But you can go on, there is a media release on Waikato District Council's website around the Variation 3 for more information on that as well.
Okay. Can we go through a couple of things really quick?
Yep, sure.
Because we've been here for a while. The alcohol ban area in Raglan.
Is part of the alcohol bylaw.
Yeah, so has that been extended or something?
That has been extended to the more of the CBD area and down to the wharf.
So it didn't used to go down to the wharf?
No, it didn't go down to the wharf. So if you have a look on that map, and folks, just
not that map.
As a reminder, please, this is only on public land. So that i.e. means on the footpath, it's not in your backyard or your front yard, anything like that. So it is. Do you want me to have a look at it?
It says, well, I've got the words here, extending the seasonal alcohol ban period for Raglan District from 23rd of December to 6th of January to 23rd of December to the 10th of February. So a whole other five weeks.
Yeah, so that covers that whole really busy period, including Waitangi Day.
Okay, and expanding the permanent alcohol ban area in town. Well, I haven't got a map to look at myself right now.
So it is the sort of the CBD area, including down to the wharf, James Street, and I asked for John Street to be included for the Aroaro area there.
Oh, yeah,
and
where
it's
people
just
camp out.
Yep, and then I think it's to the top of Bow Street from the top of my head along and then down to really to the Wainui Bridge. So...
Okay,
off the top of my head, off memory, but there is a map, and that's still open for submissions as well.
Okay, we need to follow that up. The water tower progress, can we make an announcement about that?
Yes, we can, because it's actually out in the local rags, so there's an article in there. And Theo, who was the successful artist out of the 17 that put in their expressions of interest, Theo Araj was the artist that was chosen by the independent panel.
Okay.
And the destination management organisation, of which I'm on the committee. We've been in the background, and Jacqueline Anderson actually has been our amazing coordinator of that. So yesterday we met on site, and Matua Sean and Angeline and Cheryl Tukiri, alongside Fiatili Turner, who's our Māori board councillor for this area, and others, including Jean Carbon, Pipiri, who was one of our rangatahi panellists, was there, and others to have a karakia to bless and put in the context of, you know, the beautiful taonga that was the water tower work that had been on the water tower for the decades that we've known it to be there, and really acknowledging that work and those artists and the people who were involved previously. So we did a karakia and had some kōrero up there. It was beautiful, actually. And Theo had already started on finishing off the water blasting of the top part of the water tower, and you would have seen this morning on your walk down, perhaps, half of the bottom half has already been undercoated.
I didn't, because I was looking at the shiny new asphalt on the steep part of Bow Street. I actually didn't even look at the water tower.
Yeah, no, so since yesterday he has completed the bottom half of undercoating.
Normally I would look at the tower on the way past, but yeah, I was... Okay, I'll look at it on the way home.
Yeah, so Theo has done that. So that's really exciting, and we'll be having a community day up there. I can't remember the day that we're having that, but we'll be having a sausage sizzle, and there are opportunities to actually meet Theo and go up and say hi. He's going to be busy. Toot your horn, give him some support, and, you know, he lives here locally with his partner. And yeah.
Cool. All right. Thank you for coming in, Lisa.
That's a pleasure. Hey, and good luck for tonight, for the 30-year celebration of, Raglan Radio.
Mm.
And that's no mean feat, Aaron. So well done to you and your team for continuing that.
Well, I haven't been here the whole 30 years.
No, but, you know, and those want to acknowledge those who have passed and have been part of that journey of the 30 years. So well done, you guys.
Yeah. So that's tonight, folks. I'll mention it now since Lisa's brought it up at the yard. Get your tickets at Humanitix, or you can actually door sales. I haven't mentioned that, but we can get door sales.
Awesome. And also good luck to the Freedom to Fly event that's on this weekend, that's kicking off tonight.
Already started. I went to a thing last night.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Oh, it already started last night, so I'm behind the times, but there's the Busking Festival on Sunday as well. And the Hauora for Health Walk, the Hikoi for Hauora is also happening on Sunday, and that's
10.
Starting off at the yard at
10
o'clock.
Yeah.
So so much going on, community, get in behind our community and awesome community-initiated events. Anyway, have a fabulous weekend, Aaron, and so too to the community.
Thank you for coming in, Lisa.
Hi Raglan, Wayne Super Values. Come in and check out our great specials with over 1,000 every week. If you are a gold card holder, every second Tuesday is for you. Present your card and receive an instant 5% discount on your purchases, including all existing specials. Our community cash grants are available to all local clubs and organisations. Our New Zealand Post and Kiwibank staff are here to help. We look forward to seeing you in store and being part of this great Raglan community.
Starting a landscaping project or just need ideas? Come and see us at Raglan Landscape Supplies. We have all the landscaping products you need. From stones to sleepers, sand to bark, drainage meters to builder's mix, pavers to compost. We even have a plant nursery. We deliver to your door. We have free customer loan trailers. We also hire out a post-hole borer, concrete mixer, compactor and water blaster.
Please check out our website, www.raglanlandscapesupplies.co.nz.
We are at 140 Tomato Road. Look for the big green wheelbarrow or ring 825 0577.
Raglan Community Radio supports the Raglan Food Bank. The food bank can be found at 36 Bow Street opposite the Community House and is open for business between 1 and 3 Mondays and Fridays.
Donations can be dropped off at these times or at Super Value.
Check out the food bank's current needs on our sign at the Super Value entrance or online at surfside.co.nz.
Or find out more about the Surfside Community Services, Food Bank and Counselling Services by phoning 825 5199.
The Raglan Food Bank, Raglan's only true community bank.
What do we Māori and Nguru nei?
Yo! Oh! Aweha!
Tai nui a whiro and Nguru nei!
Yo! Oh! Aweha!
Radio Whangaroa 98.1 FM.
And apologies for the silence. I forgot to turn the microphone on. Didn't talk for long though. Didn't have a lot to say. It's now 7:15, which gives us time to listen to part of an interview that Aaron did with Crystal, talking about Karioi and Malibu and things like that. So, and you have time for about half of it, a bit less than half, but here goes.
What we want to start off actually talking about today is, because we haven't seen Crystal since Malibu Hamilton passed away, and Malibu had a bit of an influence over the Karioi project and its formation. So what do you have uppermost in your mind?
Yeah, so, I mean, Malibu was the convener for Te Whakaoranga o Karioi, so there was...
Which
means the restoration of Karioi.
Yeah.
But it was a collective put together when lots of people in the community would get very upset when Doc would come and do a 1080 op.
Mm.
And so the initiatives were started with the... you know, purpose of like doing something on Karioi that was practical and involved the community. And so that essentially was what the Karioi project set out to do. And eventually, I think time went by and it was contentious and nothing like real practical was happening except some of the hapu was, you know, doing possum trapping, and there would have been hunters out there doing some possum work.
And I knew,
you know,
there were,
so it wasn't nothing.
Yeah, and there were random people who just like went up and did their own trapping because they wanted to.
For sure. Yeah, but it didn't probably, that didn't really come under Te Whakaoranga o Karioi. And I think what, by the time I kind of met up with them, because I think this was more around 2007, 2008, maybe even like before that. And anyway, and then I came back from overseas and actually was just outside here, the town hall.
Yeah.
That I remember talking to Malibu. I was involved with the Environment Centre and I'd already met Malibu and been involved a little bit with the Environment Centre before I went overseas, a few years before that. And I knew Liz and Rick and all those guys. And I just remember him and I chatting outside there on the stairs and him saying, why don't you do something, Crystal? You know, and we were talking about Karioi. And obviously, like, I was working at NIWA at the time. I was a marine and freshwater ecologist. But I had dabbled a little bit in kind of biodiversity restoration at Kakapuka and being part of a translocation of North Island robin.
So that's a little cone over forest. The other side of the divvy, sort of out the other side of Taronga.
Te Awamutu.
Yeah.
And so, and then I'd also – so I'd done that project with Kim King, who's like – Carolyn King, who's like the mammal expert in New Zealand. Like, she wrote the she edited the mammal handbook of New Zealand.
What mammals do we have?
Well, like predators.
Ah, yeah. All right. So, they're not native plants.
Yeah, so she was doing – so a lot of friends of mine had done a master's in that with her around stoat research.
Mm.
So I wasn't completely ignorant, but I had like really purposely chosen to do marine and freshwater ecology because that's the space I wanted to work in and be in.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing at NIWA. But – like for me, at the same time as like, or just before that conversation with Malibu, I had been driving up and down from Te Uku because I lived out there to Hamilton for work and crossing the divvy. And then obviously every night coming back and I'd look at Karioi and go, there's no community project on that mountain. And it was kind of like that thought in my head. And then Malibu's words kind of collided when he was like, why don't you do something?
Yeah.
And it was very much his inspiration around, you know, because I was probably like, oh, well, what should we do? And, you know, obviously got a bit of the background, would meet for coffees and chat about it. I kept promising that I'd do something. But what does doing something look like? So in the end, what happened was that I had promised to write like a little management plan around what we could do. And I don't mean for the whole mountain, but Malibu just said, why don't you just focus on Upper Wainui Reserve? It has easy access. Like we can get people, the neighbors involved. He lived up there.
So
he kind of sparked those first ideas. And then he also said, I'll get Sandy Hunuku to come along. And Sandy was living on the mountain, like, you know, on the Hapu block right next door. And he was already trapping possums and doing in that space. And so Malibu pulled that together. And my bit was is that I was quite connected, like, with various people, young people that were, like, ecologists or, you know, young ecologists working in that space, especially through Jerry Kessel. So I spent time with Jerry. He was a consultant out at Te Pahu. And so he had a lot of young ecologists working for him, and so I connected with them. I went to Doc and said, hey, can we do this project? And Doc kind of said, well, this is the obstacle. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. You can't use toxins. You can't do this, can't do that. But you can use traps. I was like, fine, we'll use traps. Mm. And so I kind of just, I guess, got in their face and like sat at their desk and get, okay, show me what I need to do if I want to start this project, you know. And then there's no way, I just remember distinctly not wanting to go about doing it by myself. And so first it was
the mountain, yeah.
Yeah, with the whole mountain. Yeah. But also, you know, even starting anything, like, you know, the thought of starting anything by yourself would, like, just make me go, oh, no, no way.
That's very
but
wise.
But because Malibu was there kind of encouraging and championing, and he kept kind of prodding me and had already those first steps, kind of that vision for the first steps, all I kind of really had to do was put wheels on it. And so I asked a couple of the girls like Britta and that, and actually Maharu, and like there was a whole bunch of them that were there, and said, hey, if we do this thing, will you come and help out? And they were like, yes, of course. And so I know that sounds really simple, but it was such a big deal at the time, because suddenly we had a group of about 10 to 15 of us, like a few people in the community that we'd networked with. Maybe, I can't remember if we put out a bit of a notice. I think they had like a supporters list from Te Whakaoranga Karioi of people that had signed up. So we sent that out and just said, hey, come along. And then we had this first meeting to start it, and it was actually in Mike Goodison's house. And we sat around the table. I think there was about 12 people, and Sandy opened with a karakia, and that was the start of it. It was amazing.
But you had no money at that point?
We had no money, but there was this little fund that Doc had called the Community Conservation Fund, Waikato Community Conservation Fund, and you could apply for up to $5,000, and we got about $4,800 or whatever. And so we bought our first traps, and just all the bits and pieces that we needed to get going. Oh, and then the other big thing was that I had written this little management plan saying, hey, this is what we want to do in Upper Wainui. This is what that would look like. And someone had taken that and thrown it on Ollie Gansel's desk. And Ollie's a local doc guy here that lives in this community. And he hit me up and said, well, tell me what you want to do. I'll give you some support. And so he gave us all the technical support and showed us how to set the traps and like what to buy and how to build the tunnels, because we used to build the rat trap tunnels out of Corflu.
Yeah.
And we like hit up like regional council for like bits and pieces, and local real estate donated real estate signs to, you know, Corflu signs. So it was just like this real like little collective of us. And then we had a bunch of people from Hamilton that I was connected in with, like from through Arosha, the trust I'd set up. And so they came and helped build tunnels.
So you set up the local, this part of the country, Arosha Trust.
For the whole country.
For the whole country.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was just this collection of like just a whole bunch of us of like – just passionate people that just willing to do something, like be really practical. And I don't mean to sound negative, but we really try to tap into the people that wanted to do something, not talk about it.
Yeah, this is a thing.
You know?
You're not the only person who said that thing.
Yeah, and that's not – there's a place for everything, like activism and protest and all that's really important, right? But for this particular bit of work, you needed people that really just wanted to get out in the bush and do the stuff. And that's exactly what we did. And actually all we said was that we would put out the traps. I think we had about 60 traps. And we'd all get together, like, and deployed them all, and Ollie helped us set the lines, and, you know, so we kind of met on Saturday mornings or afternoons or something, or maybe it was Sundays, actually. We went out for walks with some of the kids that we had, like Helen Ritchie's kids, they're all grown up now, like, they were some of the first ones that came out and joined us, and just made it fun for everyone. So we tried to, so some of the values that we had was around, like, really early on, like, you know, Malibu was very strong on, like, you know, it's got to be a community project. We've got to get the community involved. So we have ownership over it, you know? And then it was very much also a partnership approach because we were all from different entities and kind of groups and had different affiliations, but we were all coming together. So there was a strong partnership approach, a strong focus on working with mana whenua. So Sandy and his whānau, like, you know, getting involved and doing their bit. And then also a big thing that Malibu said is that we wanted to create local employment. And so his vision was to kind of have four rangers on the mountain.
Yeah.
You know, just yeah. And
how many you got now?
Four,
there we go.
Yeah.
Tick.
Yeah. So it's really it was really visionary of him.
Yeah, he had such a clear picture of what needed to happen all the time and whatever the issue was. And he was involved, I think John counted up 18 so far. I don't know if he's found any more major kind of organizations or issues that he got involved in in his time here. So
I often joke now is like, hey, we just started this little project and we were just wanting to trap some rats. And so we weren't thinking, like, it was just that next step. What are we going to do next? It wasn't like we're going to start this big thing. It was like, let's just start on this 10 hectares. We chucked in 60 rat traps. In the first week, we caught 80 rats. And we did all the monitoring. We got a student from the University of Waikato.
Because there were so many.
Yeah. So, like, someone went and checked. I remember feeling really disappointed because it was Hugh Oliver. He lived just down the road. He's very old man now.
Yeah.
I think he's mostly in Hamilton now. But he would come and, like, show us his carvings, and he was like an entomologist, and he'd talk about the bugs, and he loved the audience and sharing the information. So it was just all these people coming together that were really excited about doing stuff but also sharing what they knew. And then we'd go and check the trap, and I remember he went and checked the traps, like, before we got a chance to do it the next Sunday. And I was like, remember thinking, oh my gosh, he checked the first traps. Like, and he'd already reset them again. That's why we caught like 80 out of like probably 60 traps in that first week.
Oh, because they've been done, they had two goes at it.
Yeah. And then we did all the monitoring, and it really showed that decline in numbers. And, you know, like, and then we were like, oh, we'll just do it for spring. And then at the end of spring, everyone was like, we were like, should we stop now? And everyone was like, no, we'll keep going. And we've never stopped. It was really interesting too because, you know, some would argue like, well, what difference do you make in that small segment of bush, right? But it was all about getting people involved and just starting somewhere. And then
learning.
Yeah, and then another really, really important conversation I had was that I went and saw a guy in Hamilton who was at Landcare Research, John Innes, and he was an expert on rat ecology. And I said to him, and I went to him and I said, you know, if we do this thing, like, is it worth it? And he said, every rat you catch is worth it. And it's just those little conversations that just drop pennies, you know, for us. It's like, ah, yep, okay, this is worth doing. It's really funny because years later I talked to him about that and he said, yeah, I don't know if I believe that anymore. And I was like, don't you change your mind.
Yeah, too late.
Anyway.
Sometimes I think that's the wrong question. Like, if you're feeling driven to do it, you should be doing it.
Mm.
That's because we should be doing with our lives what we feel driven to do,
yeah.
not what we should do or
yeah.
what our mother told us to do
yeah.
for our career or, you know, that sort of stuff. Like, yeah, if there's a passion and a drive and there's a community around it, that means it should be happening.
Yeah. 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 And every time we expanded, like, then we found out about the seabirds, and Malibu was like, well, you know, then we should. I was like, should we go into the next reserve? And he's like, yes, we should do that. And then we crossed the mountain, and then we got some money, and, you know, we got Sandy's trust to kind of set more lines and cut lines, and we were able to pay them.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of how things grew. And Malibu, often we'd kind of come back together and meet. And I'd be kind of like, what's next, you know? What should we do?
And unfortunately, what's next is that we've got to the end of Raglan talking to Raglan. So I need to come back to that hopefully next week. But as I say, there's that public meeting on the sewage treatment next week, so I'm not sure what's happening then. But if you have been, thanks for listening. If you haven't, hope you might join me one way or another next week, 6-ish till 7:30-ish. Here on Raglan Community Radio, Erangel Whangarā, where it's just gone the bottom of the hour. And we've got Church's Robert Smith, How Not to Drown, lined up.